Coming to you live from Dominic Abate's parents' house, it's Rob Has a Podcast. And now, here's a guy who has returned to Long Island for a podcast. I am Rob Cesternino. Well, everybody, welcome back to Rob Has a Podcast. Very excited to be here in person with a great friend, a person who is the number one organizer of fun in the Survivor community and has graciously taken me into his parents' home. Please welcome Dominic Abate. Dominic, how are you?
What's up, Rob? That's some introduction, buddy. You know, I was thinking, as you were saying it, you could have been like, coming to you live from Dominic's parents' apartment. But no, I guess it's a... Yeah, I appreciate also the other day you're on with Fishback and you were protecting our location as if we were going to be underground somewhere.
Yeah, I don't remember exactly what I said, but like I wouldn't need to give that out.
Yeah, yeah,
to
yeah.
Have, you know, people, you know, showing up here at your parents' house.
Yeah, so you're back on Long Island for the weekend and here we are. We couldn't figure out a location that worked. And the reason why I suggested here is because my folks have a lot of space and most of their kids moved out. I'm one of nine children and there's a lot of room here. A lot of us moved out and it's quiet and my house is a train wreck right now. There's toys and decorations and kids sleeping over. So I just figured this would be a more ideal location for us.
Can you tell me, how did the conversation with your parents go about, hey, mom and dad, can my friend, the nerdy podcast man, come over with all of his podcast stuff and can we record in your basement?
Well, my parents really are not, they're really not aware of what a podcast is.
Yes.
Even
yes.
Still at this point. So my father heard recording and he's a musician in, well, he's been a musician for some time and he's starting to get into it. So he heard recording and he thought we were going to come here and record an album for him. So
there's a lot of like guitars around.
There's a lot of music equipment in the room we're in right
keyboard.
Now. This is a makeshift room we're in right now. If I could describe it, it's half workshop, half music studio, half play area and storage and tomato
build
sauce.
Something you know. Or yeah. We can, you know, jam for a little bit.
It's this is the room I decided that we should record in because, I just thought the studio aspect of it made it feel a little more comfortable.
Yes, no, this is great. And it's early in the morning on Sunday morning. And so got out here and really excited to get to do this with you in person. I don't get to do a ton of these Survivor podcasts in person. So this is really great.
Yeah, and typically when you do, we're in your studio, right? You'd be in your studio.
Yeah, I haven't had anybody in the studio with me this season. Oh, really? Yeah, it's been, you know, that this Survivor season, I think everybody's been over Skype or whatever, but I don't think anybody, unless somebody's like, hey, like, screw you, Rob, I was there.
Yeah, wait, Nick Majorano, Bradley, no, none of those?
No. Oh, you did Bradley. And that was like the second week of the season. Gotcha, Bradley came into the studio. That's gotcha. Right.
Okay. Hey, nice going, Rob. Can't believe you forgot about me.
But we just said, I blew it. So kudos to Bradley for being the only person from season 39 to make it into the studio as far as Survivors go. But this is very exciting to get to talk to you here in person that you and I really have not ever done a one-on-one like this. Never in person, but not even like a one-on-one like this. Really, since going back to right after you got off of Ghost Island,
right.
That we've done know-it-alls.
Right.
We have done the podcast where we said, let's have the double date podcast. Oh, that was a year ago where we brought our wives onto the podcast and let them talk about stuff. But we have not gotten the chance to.
Also,
really,
we had a threesome podcast with Kellen.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. I forgot about that one. Yes. But we have not done a one-on-one in quite some time. And
correct.
I really, you know, of the many, many tragedies of this Survivor season that, you know, what a killer week I had booked on the podcast of Christian and then Dominic Abate
and gets overshadowed by all of this, you know, craziness with everything with Dan's removal from the game. But that, you know, we're gonna still get into everything. We still have the Survivor finale coming up on Wednesday. So, yeah, I will be headed back out to cover all of that on. I'll be going back to Los Angeles tonight, and then I'll be there in person on Wednesday. And then I will, with the earlier start time for the finale, I'm able to then go and get back to my house for the Survivor Know-It-All. So this will be another first where I'll be able to attend the finale and also do Survivor Know-It-Alls on the same day.
Very nice. How was your weekend home on Long Island, by the way? I know you had a wedding.
Yep.
I mean, at least if you're going to come to Long Island in December, you can expect like snow. Instead, you got a miserable rainy day. Like, don't you just want to go home? I mean, I want to go with you. Get me out of here.
So we got in on Friday morning. I recorded with Christian on Thursday. I recorded like a Facebook Live on Thursday. And then we got to the airport. My wife was going nuts that we were in 2 hours of traffic, that she was telling the kids we're going to miss the flight. We had like a lot of time to spare. And so we got in, and then there was like a little bit of like snow on the ground, that which was like a thrill for my kids, like the dusting of snow. And
leftovers.
Then, yeah. And
all the dirt in it.
And we went to a wedding on Friday night for my cousin, Julie. Congratulations, Julie and Mick. And then on yesterday, I was at my mom's house, and my kids, like, they were like, I knew they were up to something. And they had this whole thing orchestrated where they had like taken like the little bit of snow that was on the ground and taken it and put it into they made snowballs and put them in a freezer and then kept them like, we're going to wait until Dad comes and then we'll throw all the snowballs at him. And I saw them like pss, 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 like whispering, like I knew something was up, like I haven't lost all my Survivor senses. And then yesterday at my mom's house, then they finally like I knew the ambush was coming and walked into it.
Yeah, I think I saw something.
Yeah, I posted on Instagram that they had never thrown my younger son for, you know, a long time said, Dad, I want to throw a snowball at you. So they finally got me. That was nice. So
good for them.
So they got to have some snow, and it hasn't been like terribly cold. A lot of rain here this weekend. But anyway, Dom, so excited to get to talk with you about this. There is still a game. It's been overshadowed at times, but
absolutely
somebody
is
going to be the winner of Survivor coming up on Wednesday night, and do you feel like you know who it's going to be?
And for the record, you know, we had that holiday gathering last weekend and some of the 39ers were there. Mm-hmm. I just want to stress that they were tight-lipped.
Mm-hmm.
There's been no spoilers. Nobody knows. Matter of fact, I overheard Tommy at one point saying, none of us know who won. None of us know who won. We're not sure.
Mm-hmm.
We all know that's baloney, right? I mean...
Well, sometimes I think that maybe it's more true than others.
Well, I don't know. Maybe that's the case. I'll say Tom's.
You went through a very special circumstance.
Yeah, I just feel like these days everyone knows.
Yeah.
You know, I don't think anyone keeps quiet about it. I mean, I remember even for myself, even when my circumstance was what it was, even though I knew I lost, I still went out of my way. Like, I had to leave to go home the next day. So basically... The vote took place. It was a tie. Laurel did her vote.
Mm-hmm.
We went back to Ponderosa that night. And then the next day, we had like 3 or 4 hours before we were ready to leave.
Yeah.
And I remember in that 3 or 4 hours, it was my goal to talk to everybody and the jury and just find out what their train of thought was, what it was that either gave it to me or didn't give it to me. I wanted to know what I did wrong. And everyone was so honest and told me everything, you know, like, Dom, it was this because of this. So I just feel like anyone that finishes the game, I think they're going to have that conversation with the people on the jury now. Maybe not. Maybe some people are like, look, I don't want to talk about it. You'll find out when you find out. But I just think at this day and age, everyone just kind of spills their guts about their reasoning and why they thought this and why they thought that. But who knows? Maybe it really is a big mystery. But as far as who I think. I mean, the obvious front runners for me is Tommy, Lauren. If Janet, again, for me, I could already say how I think the vote outs will go from here on out, just based on my own experience, which we'll get into. Yeah. But as far as my front runners, I'd say Tommy first, Lauren second.
Okay. How do we get there? What are you seeing?
All right. So we're looking at Janet, Nora, Dean, Tommy.
And I just want to add to that, that I really respect the way that you have an understanding of the game and you've played so recently. And so I feel like you're so tapped in to what the players are thinking right now. So I feel like that I'm really excited to pick your brain about how this is all going to play out.
Sure. And even with seven, with the latest vote out with Elaine, and I'll get to where we're going with it, but just to show how my thought process works. And I think I did a podcast with Colin several weeks back, and I talked about how Elaine is not making it past seven. And one of the biggest reasons for that, from my viewing the season, is that how I compare it is like you don't have jury reaction at this point in the game. You kind of go to tribal council. You'll see the jury react to some comments you make. But really, your biggest gauge of how you're doing in the game is Jeff's reaction. And that takes place at challenges and things of that nature. Christian's a perfect example of that. For me, in my season, it was Kellen. And I'm not just saying it because she went at seven as well, but Kellen, Elaine, Christian, the three of them that all went at seven all share the one thing that I think about when I watch the game. And it's that they have this charismatic, loving personality trait that like everyone in the game just says to themselves, we can't let this person go any further because if they gain traction, we could be out. So that was my thought process with Elaine even earlier in the game. The fact that she went when she did makes sense to me, you know?
Can I ask you about that quickly? That do you feel like that Jeff sees that, or is that just part of that they get along great with everybody, Jeff included?
You get a lot of interaction with Jeff at these things, and some people get more than others. Mm-hmm. Bradley even said that to me early in the season. Which is another reason why, to me, Bradley had to go. And again, I'm not talking about my stuff, but if I want to pinpoint it, Bradley would tell me after like the first or second challenge, Dom, you're getting a lot of airtime with Jeff. Dom, you're getting a lot of airtime with Jeff. And that would tell me, oh, he's not happy with that. Bradley, I mean, he's smiling when he tells me that, but I'm not sure he loves that. So that to me would be a gauge. Oh, Jeff is interacting with me a lot. That might turn other players in my game off. Maybe I should tone it down a bit. Maybe I shouldn't be as charismatic when I'm around him. In other words, just don't, if you see that Jeff is reacting to you, it could put a target on you. In addition to all the other things that could make you a target. You know what I mean? So for me, that's the gauge. And you could see how Jeff reacted to Elaine throughout this season on a lot of things. She was amazing in tribal. I mean, that's the other thing about all three of them. Christian, Kellen, Elaine, like they come from all different backgrounds, all different levels of education, whatever it is. But all three of them were so good at really explaining why they were there, what their goal was, what they wanted to get out of it. And I just thought it made sense to me why Elaine went when she did. And now moving forward, it's clear as day that Janet is that next person. Like Janet is as good, you know, great story, super likable, loving, caring person. If I had to guess, Janet's next to go. And then it's kind of a free for all. The fact that Dan got removed, it changed up so many different game plans for people. I mean, obviously, Tommy and Dean wanted to go to the end with Dan. But now it's like, what do we do now? And they have to kind of finesse their way through it to the end. And I think Nora is going to obviously replace Dan, if I had to guess.
Okay. And so then of that final three grouping, you feel like the winner will be?
So if going to the end, if it's Tommy, Dean, and Nora, I want to say at this point, Tommy would win it.
I think it's a runaway. Yeah. I mean, I think we're looking at like however many votes are going to be on the jury. And I know that some people have said, are Rob and Sandra going to vote? Whatever it is. Then I'm not sure if there's one vote for Dean or Nora in that scenario.
Right. Now,
and I have said that if Dean can win out maybe and make the fire and stuff like that, that maybe, you know, there's some room for Dean.
It seems like Tommy has everyone in his pocket. I mean, even Janet was like, when she was looking for an idol, she was saying, you know, I really want this for myself. I might not even want to tell Tommy about it. Like, why would she tell Tommy about it? Obviously, she has a strong relationship.
Yeah.
You see Elaine on the beach, like, you know, being playful with Tommy on the beach. Like, everyone has a great relationship with Tommy. This guy has everyone figured out.
Yeah.
Here's what is weird to me. Is that we talked about this in past seasons, like, as like the surfer dude, like, what if, like, at the end of the season, the surfer dude, like a Devin Pinto, came out at Final Three and was like, I've been lying this whole time. Like, I'm not really that guy. I'm, you know, well educated. And I'm not saying Dean is that guy, but Dean played a quiet game the entire time.
Yeah. And Dean is well educated.
Right. Well, we know that. Yeah. Right. But he's played a quiet game. And now all of a sudden, like, he's starting to realize, like, it's time to get creative. And was that his game plan the whole time, to just sit tight? Like, in other words, I feel like the new way to play the game is don't do anything until the last few days of the game, almost, because it's almost like what sticks in the jury's mind is the most recent action taken. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So if you can make a big show in the last few days, that could be enough to put you over the edge. Like you said, though, it has to be combined with going on a little bit of an immunity run or winning in fire making or just talking a really good game. As of now, it sounds to me like it's a sure win for Tommy, but I wouldn't be surprised if Dean pulled something out of his hat. Just the way you heard him. It's ridiculous, that fake idol making thing. Like, everyone's like mocking him.
Well, he might have dodged a bullet that he didn't have to play the fake one.
I'm bummed about this.
Yeah, we have a couple questions about that also. But
before we get into that question about it, I want to know, like, in other words, people were giving him grief that he played this fake advantage and he created a fake advantage. But I kind of see what he was doing with it, where he was saying, look, it may be real, it may not be real. Most likely it's not. But in the event that it is, let them think that it's flushed, right? As long as they think it's flushed, they won't bug me about it.
Dom, why didn't you invent making a fake legacy advantage?
Yeah, well, I ran out of stuff. Well, let me tell you something else. The Jamal advantage, when he went to Island of the Idols, it did seem a little wacky. Like, when Robin Sanders said, look, here's a blank parchment. This presents opportunity. That is something I said in my pregame when I was sitting down with Josh. Like, they asked the questions, Dalton, like, what if you could bring anything? My thing was, I want a blank piece of parchment. I want a blank parchment out there that I can come up with some idea that I can create a twist in the game on my own terms. So when they presented that to Jamal, I just think he didn't have enough time to really like they basically put him to the fire and was like, dude, you got to come up with something in the next hour because you're going back to camp. So figure out what you're going to do with it. But if you can take that blank parchment and go back to camp with it and let it like overnight sleep and think about what you can do with it, that's what you can do with it. And that's kind of what happened with me with the fake idol that I found.
With all due respect to Jamal, like, what he did do, it did work. It just wasn't enough to save him. Like, like, he was able to.
It actually burnt him, though, because he had to present this thing. And, like, now all of a sudden, no one knew what the hell it meant.
Yeah.
But like I said, if you have enough time, you can. The key to the game is creativity. Like, whatever you have in front of you, what can you put together to make something happen? So for me, when I found David's fake idol, like, I didn't just, like, the initial idea is, oh, let me plant it the way David did. Let someone think it's fake. They'll play it. Fine. And I was like, but can we do something more with that? You know, is there a way to get even more creative with it? And I wasn't going to do what I did at Final Six with it until Angela kind of gave me a thing like, oh, they're taking you out now.
Yeah.
So, you know what I mean? So it's about having the time to really come up with a way to do something with it. I got off all tangent here.
So I want to just talk about Tommy real quick, because that he does appear to be the preeminent favorite to win this thing. If, you know, I know you're a big poker guy. I feel like, what would you say his odds are right now going into this finale?
Well, you have to remember, is he gonna, well, yeah, you got Janet has,
here, I say I think he's 50% to 50? Win this thing.
I was going to say like 3-1.
Yeah.
At this point, I'd say 3-1 on him. Yeah.
Okay.
So, yeah, somewhere between 33 and 50% that he's going to win it.
So I feel like that one thing we have not done a lot on the podcast, because I feel like that, you know, there's so much goodwill towards Janet. People really want to see Janet win. People would love to see a woman win after four straight men have won. So I feel like there's a lot of sort of resistance to a Tommy win. But just talking about like, let's view it in a vacuum that you know, you're season 39, the game. And just as that season alone, what would you make of Tommy as a winner? What are his strengths?
His social game's his number one strength, mm-hmm. for sure. Like I said earlier, he just, everyone seems to think they're his best friend,
mm-hmm.
right? Like everyone thinks Tommy's my guy. Tommy's mm-hmm. Lauren thinks it. Janet thinks it. Dean thinks it. Dan thinks it. They all feel that way. Nora, you can't really figure out what she thinks, you know, because she's kind of all over the place. But I think for the most part, the majority of the cast believes Tommy is their ride or die.
Mm-hmm.
And that is key to winning this game. Unfortunately for Tommy, now he's going to have to burn some of these people that think there is number one. But I think he's lovable enough that they'll respect it mm-hmm. after it happens, that it's not going to like completely ruin him. So I think his number one strength, he hasn't really won any immunity challenges. He hasn't found idols. He hasn't done anything creatively with the mm-hmm. twists in the game, but just his pure social game alone will get it done.
Yeah.
As far as I'm concerned.
It's almost out of this era that he has played like this traditional Survivor game and has not relied on idols and has not relied on immunity. I mean, that's what's been almost unique about him as a Survivor player and maybe potentially a Survivor winner, is that he has not, through getting to this point, relied at all on any sort of like, artificial devices between, I guess artificial devices is probably the wrong terminology, but any advantage, any idol, and not even winning immunity.
Right. And that's, you can quiet a lot of the people who wanted to see some old school gameplay, right? Because that's what he will have done. If he wins, he will have won the game mm-hmm. purely on social game. And that's how the game was created back on season one. It was a pure social thing. So I think it would be interesting, right? I think there is some backlash about another guy winning.
Mm-hmm.
But if he does do it, I think it's a pure way that he did it. And I think mm-hmm. It will be appreciated for sure.
So I am sympathetic towards, as sympathetic as I can be towards anybody that wins the game, towards Tommy, that I just feel like that the conditions of his win were not great for him, especially coming on the heels of everything with Dan, to have it also be, by the way, it's also been this is the longest stretch in Survivor history that men have won the show, and then to have him be the fifth person in a row, the fifth guy in a row to win the season, you know, he didn't do, that wasn't on him. And so, right. You know, he's going to end up, you know, taking a lot of extra heat, but the check helps, I guess.
Yeah. When you get the check,
not that we know.
I'm sure you can shut a lot of, noise off once that check's in your hand. Right.
Yeah.
I tell you, you brought something up a few weeks ago about, the current run of male winners. And, we think there's some correlation to the fire making challenge.
Yeah.
You know, and I'm curious like how that plays out, because I do, the fire making challenge for me is such an interesting component of the game now. It's something I've studied even after I've gone through mm-hmm. the whole thing, you know, like for season 35 before me, they didn't know it was coming. We did know it was coming.
Mm-hmm.
And ever since then, I like to see how people utilize that situation. It's really something you should be thinking about super early in the game. That I don't think players do. I think they just get wrapped up in.
Why? What would you do? Because I feel like I wouldn't think about it early in the game.
You know, it's weird though. But I remember when I was playing and it was like, I don't know, it was after the first swap and James was on my tribe.
Yeah.
And I remember like I made a fire to get it started, you know, and I remember James Lynn being like, wow, you made that fast.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember turning around and being like, oh my God, like that could potentially be a reason to get rid of me. I just did that in front of James if he starts telling people.
Yeah.
So I'm just saying it's something you should be aware of. And as far as who you're taking to the end, it should definitely affect who you want to go to the end with. And it all depends on how you want to play your end game. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. In this day and age, I feel like, do you have to take the immunity necklace off and go out and fire against your biggest threat now? Is that like the new thing ever since Chris did it? And I'm curious to see if that's how people are going to play the game now. And if so, will that be a big part of the decision making into who you keep with you? And how is that going to affect women winning this game moving forward? Because I want to see a woman win Final Four Challenge and then make that ballsy move. I want to see that big, bold play, you know?
Yeah.
So it's just tricky. So we'll see how it progresses. But
so the interesting thing here is that we have Janet, who, based on what we've seen on the show, appears to be far away the best fire maker of the group. And she also has an immunity idol here at the final five. So the stage is set for Janet to have some good things for her, except that Dean just got the idol nullifier at the last Island of the Idols. So let me play you this question. This is from Sheldon, has a question for you about Janet.
Hi, Rob and Dom. It's Sheldon from London. So I think I agree. I think Stephen made this point on the know-it-alls that Janet's game pretty much came down to a coin flip from Dean as to whether or not he's going to get the nullifier, and that will influence whether she makes the final four or not. And we know that Janet is such a beast at making fire. So if she gets to four, she's a lock to win the game. But with this nullifier in play, how screwed is Janet? Does she have any hope whatsoever to redeem the season by surviving the final five vote? Maybe the girls could get together and dump some votes on Tommy. I don't know, but I think Janet is pretty much toast, and I think we should have all been sleeping on 39 from the very beginning. Oh, no. Anyway, looking forward to season 40.
All right. So, Dominic, that you have a very creative survivor mind. Can you help us figure out a way that Janet is not screwed on this first vote on Wednesday night?
Let me start by saying I hate the idol nullifier. Mm-hmm. I mean, I could deal with everything else, but the nullifier drives me nuts. Janet had a chance if Dan wasn't removed from the game. Because now Dean is forced to play the nullifier at five. She's forced to play her idol at five.
Yeah.
And he obviously suspects that she has the idol. So her idol's being nullified no matter what at five. I think that's safe to say. The question is, can Janet navigate enough votes to not allow Tommy Dean to take over? Like, I think Janet's best play is to go along with everything Elaine said, which is continue to make Lauren feel like she's not going to the end. You know, the problem with that now is you're missing that sixth person. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like, you could have convinced Nora and Lauren to do something, but now that Dan is out of the equation, it's almost going to be obvious to the five remaining players that the final three is going to be Tommy, Dean, and Nora.
Yeah.
So how do you change that now at this point? It's like you skipped over a stone and now you've changed so many ideas and plans that people had. Mm-hmm. So how do you get Janet to that point? And I don't know that you can.
So is it maybe not with Janet, but with Tommy, where it seemed like that Tommy felt like, hey, I've got Dan and I've got Dean and that's my guaranteed win. And then I'm going to put Lauren into making the fire and she's not going to be able to make the fire. And that's how I'm going to ultimately, I didn't vote out Lauren, but she went into the fire making and she's not going to be able to get it done. However, whoever he put her, I guess maybe Dean versus Lauren. And again, I have no idea how any of these people are.
He might not even be the decision.
I know Janet's good at making the fire. I don't know anything else about anybody else's fire making ability, except for the fact that, I think maybe Elaine brought it up to Lauren that, you're going to be making the fire. He's going to put you in to make the fire.
Well, she at least put that in her head.
Right.
Which is smart.
So, but now what is, like, we're assuming that Nora is going to replace Dan right. in Tommy's final three, but I don't think that we've seen that on the show at all. Is it possible that Tommy now is more concerned about any new information in terms of like, does he not think that Nora would be a good person to bring to the end? And now is he more interested in, you know, is Lauren definitely in his plans, or now is he like, hey, I really got to vote out Lauren here at final five because now I can't be so sure about what I'm going to do.
I think Lauren looks a little better now that Dan's out than she did originally.
But Tommy might feel that Lauren is going to beat him in the end. So he might be like, he'd be forced to act sooner and maybe go after Lauren.
I think he thinks Lauren could beat her, but I think he knows Janet will win. You know what I mean? Yeah. And I think we even heard it in the last episode where when Lauren was feeling like a jealous girlfriend, he was like, look, these are my four. I would love to bring Janet, but she's going to win. Like, I've never felt more strongly that there's no one left in the game that wants to go with Janet. When Nora asked the question, does anyone want to go to final three with Elaine at the last tribal council? No one raised their hand. They all feel that way about Janet.
Yeah.
And she wasn't helping her case when she was consoling Elaine at tribal last time. Like, it's great that the human emotion gets you in this game and you get to go through that process and it's all part of your journey. Tone that down. Because that will cost you the money. And I know people say, oh, I'm not here for the money. I'm here for the adventure and I'm here for this. But then you're on your couch 6 months later watching your season. You're like, I should have went for the goddamn money because the adventure is great. The journey is great. Win the game. It's hard, though. If you've just recently been through something,
you can have
like,
both.
I know you can have both. You can. But Elaine, who I think held it together pretty well for someone who lost her mother 3 months earlier, you can't blame her for having an emotional moment at the end. And Janet is just in her DNA. She's a caretaker. You know, she just has that. So when it's just built in you, you can't shelf that, you know, but I recommend for future players to try to really hone that in because that's what's putting the target on Elaine. It's what's putting the target on Janet. And I don't see Janet getting past the five.
Let me ask you a question about Janet from this past week's episode. And so I have another voicemail for you. This one is from Olivia on whether or not you think Janet made the wrong move at this last tribal council where Elaine got voted out.
Hi, Rob and Christian and or Dominic. It is Olivia from Riverside, California. I had a question regarding your thoughts on Janet and Lauren's decision to not vote out Nora this week. I thought it could have been a good move for both of them and would have given Janet a potential path to the end. If Nora goes out this week, I still think Elaine would have been the main target the following week, which then would put Janet at the final five where she has an idol that she could potentially use. And if Janet makes it to the final four, we know she's good at fire making and could have won the fire making challenge, putting her at the final tribal council. I'm not sure why Janet didn't see this, in my opinion, pretty secure path to the end and wanted to know your guys' thoughts. All right. Thanks. Bye.
So I thought Lauren seemed like she was on board with, hey, let's vote out Nora. Let's keep Elaine. And I feel like that, as Olivia pointed out, like, wouldn't it have been a good move for Janet to keep Elaine around for another vote? Because if anybody should be saying like, I'm not afraid to go to the end with Elaine, shouldn't it be Janet?
Absolutely.
Doesn't Janet probably win over Elaine?
Oh, that'll be close. That's a close one.
It would be close.
But I definitely agree that it was in all of their best interest to have done that. I was surprised when they didn't go through with it. And I think maybe the one reason why they didn't was maybe Janet pulled back on the idea because she found an idol. Maybe she felt like, let me stick with the majority of what we're doing. In my mind, here's all I have to do is get to five and then I could win in four. And then you see her have that epiphany in her confessional where she's like, oh my God, all I got to do is get to here. And then I get to there. Oh my God, I could win this thing. And she starts to break down a little bit because that's what you do. You start to see the path to the end. And I think it really did affect her, like, decision-making. If she didn't find that idol, I think for sure that plan would have been pulled. But the fact that she felt a little bit secure, she felt like no one knows that I have this with Tommy, and Tommy's my ride or die. He's not going to tell anyone that I have the idol. So all I have to do is get to this point and I'm in.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's why she might have pulled back, but I think it would have definitely been in their all their best interest to have turned the table on Tommy and Dean and Nora and like just completely flipped the game and taking control. Even if you have tough competition in the end, it's better to at least know that you're going to get there.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
I really love that move that Lauren was talking about doing where it was going to be her and Janet and Elaine put their three votes and the one vote that Dan was just throwing his an extra vote on Nora. And then it would have been such a great move, and it was a big move, and there wasn't even an idol involved with it. It was
the way to go for sure.
So beautiful. And then they ended up just, voting out Elaine. And I understand the issues where, okay, Elaine might win, but almost like for Janet, I feel like it's kind of like it was greedy where it was like, well, I don't know if I can beat her, but it's like, yeah, but you had a better chance to get to the final three of keeping her in there. And there's another target in front of you.
Right. That's what you have to weigh. It's a matter of, right, am I going to win if I go with this person, or am I even going to get there if I go with that person? There's a lot of options you have to weigh. And obviously Janet made what she thought was the best decision in her mind. And maybe also Lauren was getting a little bit of cold feet about it. So maybe they, both agreed. Mm-hmm. Maybe,
Yeah. And in my exit interview with Elaine, I asked her about that. And she said that the reason why it didn't happen was because Tommy wasn't on board with it. He's like, of course, Tommy's not on board.
Tommy's out of the plan. Well, why would she think that?
That's what Elaine said. Odd. So I don't know if Lauren went back to Tommy and Tommy's like, no, definitely do not do this plan.
I see.
I don't know.
It makes sense because he shouldn't be involved. Right?
He should not be involved. Okay. So I have a couple of questions for you, which I think are really great with the way that this whole Tommy and Lauren dynamic has unfolded. And people seem to be comparing Tommy and Lauren to the relationship with you and Wendell, where you guys are a super close pair. But now it comes down to who would win over the other one. And when is the right time to get rid of your, closest ally in the game? Adult Diaper Andy wants to know, Lauren may be in a familiar scenario where her closest ally is also her greatest jury threat. How exactly should she play these last few rounds, presuming that Tommy is at least decent at making fire? Now, do you look at this as a Wendell Dominic situation, the Lauren and Tommy pairing?
I definitely see that for the most of the end game, it seems like they have a lot of the decision making in their hand. Mm-hmm. They are consulting with each other all the time, which is something myself and Wendell did. If they learned anything from my season, it would be do not go to the end with that person. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? So you could already hear Tommy saying, I'm not taking Lauren to the end.
Mm-hmm.
And you don't hear it as much on the Lauren side saying that about Tommy. She's almost sounds like she's like wondering why Tommy.
Yeah. Why would Tommy want to get rid of me?
Right. Yeah. Which doesn't make sense to me. She should clearly see that Tommy's the biggest threat in this game, and she should be, which is exactly why this game plan would have made sense for her to go through it with mm-hmm. Elaine. Like she needs to separate herself from Tommy.
Yeah.
The two of them need to figure out a way to depart and break off from each other.
Now, is it possible? Does she just feel like, hey, I'm not going to lose to Tommy. Like I've got all these other, like all these votes, all the women on the jury are going to vote for me. Like, I mean, Tommy did you guys hear Teaching Time with Tommy? Like I got this guy.
It's funny because I thought that about Wendell and Wendell thought that about me.
But that's almost perfect. That when people talk about you guys should have gotten rid of one of another, I almost feel like that, in my Survivor playing days, like I never found anybody who wanted to go to the end with me. Like I almost feel like you can't be that greedy. I kind of feel like just get to the end.
And it's odd, too, because my thought about Wendell was not that I was going to beat him 10-0.
Mm-hmm.
It's that I would like edge over him by a vote or two, like mm-hmm. maybe 7-3, 6-4. I didn't think I knew he had love, but I thought, oh, I'll be better at explaining my game. Mm-hmm. And he also had that same mentality that he was going to beat me by a vote or two. And he had the mm-hmm. finesse to really tell his story. So I guess if you think that if you're Lauren or Tommy and you think, oh, I'm not going to beat this person outright, I just need to beat them by a little.
Mm-hmm.
That should be enough. But Tommy seems to be aware enough, like not to even take that chance with Lauren. Like, I don't want to have a close call with her. Yeah. I want to destroy my competition, which is really the way you should be thinking. You know, you want to have more than one or two votes, you know, leeway there. You want to really be able to say, I want 90% of the votes in my in my favor. So I don't know if that's what they're both thinking, but it seems like Tommy has more of that mentality than Lauren does towards him.
It's really hard because you want your closest ally to be somebody who is, you know, a really valuable asset, who really has a good sense of the game. And that's how you could sort of like, you know, have this mastermind where you and your closest ally are working together. You ideally don't want your closest ally to be somebody who's super delusional and feels like, oh, I'm going to definitely win when the jury hates their guts. I mean, and that's what, you know, Rob was able to do so well with in the season that he won in Redemption Island, where he was able to, you know, go to the end with people that just, you know, didn't have a chance, but were all ultimately super loyal to him and didn't see that they, and maybe in Natalie's case, maybe she did and just, you know, felt like Rob should just win anyway. But he didn't have people that were, you know, thinking that, oh, I'm going to, you know, I have to make a move against Rob because I'm not going to be able to beat him at the end. So it's very hard. I mean, I think it's almost like what you're talking about with you and Wendell is almost like a perfect scenario where you have somebody who is, you know, also an incredible player, but, you know, thinks that, you know, oh, well, I'm a little bit of an advantage. And no, I think I'm a little bit of an advantage. And then you're sort of like incentivized to still work with each other.
Yeah. And you get that impression around camp. Mm-hmm. Like, you're not imagining it. People are and a lot of it sometimes is disloyal. Like, there was a time I think that you saw in my season where Donathan was like, Wendell, if just telling you right now, my vote's going on Dom. And he was doing that to create a beef between Wendell and myself so that we decide maybe to make a move in the game. So, but still, you're still, even though he said that, I still was convinced he was voting for me. So I'm like, all right, there's one for me, you know, and you're
taking, and he voted for Wendell.
And he voted for Wendell. Yeah. So it wasn't accurate.
I think whatever people say they're going to do, they do the opposite.
Yeah, but you never know because you still feel like you have a sense of what's going on around the people you played the game with. So you're going to base those decisions on your instinct. You know what I mean? It is, you're trusting your gut, as Kellen would say. So it's tricky, but this is a really unique situation. I think there's a lot of people, right? It really comes down to so many different circumstances. If this is going to happen, if this is going to fall into place, who's going to end up doing this? I mean, I guess that's the basis of every end game of every season, but this one seems different. And a lot of it is based on prior seasons and that people don't want to end up like someone from this season or that season. They want to be the person that said, I didn't sit on my ass and I made the move. So now everyone's kind of thinking that way, you know? So it's going to be interesting to see how it unfolds.
So going into Wednesday, where we're saying that we think Janet's going to get idol nullified out of the game at five.
And almost positive.
Almost positive.
I mean, I feel so strongly that's going to happen.
Yeah. And this is, you know, it's going to be like when Suri got the advantage get in. It's really not great.
This is an even worse circumstance because it might have been different if Dan was still in the game, right? Something, maybe she didn't play it, or you don't know if Dean was going to pull the trigger on the nullifier at six or five. So at least there was a chance when there was six in the game. Now to skip over him and just, it's forced on us, you know? So, look ahead.
Yeah. Sorry. Okay. and we're piling on now. Yes. All the bad scenarios. Okay. And then probably Lauren is going to be forced to make fire and lose fire making to potentially Dean or Nora. I'm assuming Tommy's going to win immunity at four.
Okay. And if he does, we don't feel like he would, this is a situation where he'd like put the necklace around someone else and take Lauren on, or does that look like,
so it's almost like he doesn't know that's been invented yet. They haven't seen the finale of The Edge of Extinction.
Oh, okay.
So
right.
It would almost be like he would be doing that like independently of Chris Underwood doing
that's
it.
That's right. He didn't see that. Okay. You're right. So he probably will put Dean on.
I mean, thanks to you, that's in the universe, that idea, that idea. And you should get credit for being the person that's the first, like, even posit that thought into the universe and then it got acted on by Chris Underwood.
Yeah, great.
Is it possible, you know, Tommy could do it as well and say, hey, I'm making fire against Lauren?
That'd be cool.
I guess so. Yeah,
that'd be cool.
That'd be wild. But I just want to say that If you're telling me that I get Detective Dean and Nora in the final three making their case at the final tribal council, finally, like, we found something that I can look forward to.
Oh, for sure.
All right, I'm not going. I'll be glued to the TV on Wednesday if you're telling me Nora gets to make her chance to her jury arguments.
Oh, my God. How great that would be just to hear her many different perspectives.
How fired up she was when she didn't get taken on the family visit.
That
was
the greatest thing.
How fired up will she be without, you know, Elaine being like, all right, Nora, you're stay on track here.
But also, if like
you people, get a little sidetracked,
think about if people look at Nora as a zero vote finalist, right? Mm-hmm. And let's say like the jury is asking the questions, going back and forth, and no one's giving like any attention to Nora, right? And she's just sitting there like, doesn't anyone want to talk to me? Like, what's going on? Like, I played this game so hard.
Yeah.
So I would love to see even that type of scenario where like no one's even considering Nora a serious finalist and that she's just not having that either. There's so many things that are great about Nora that we're going to like, there better be gifts waiting for us for Christmas here.
Yes. So that's exciting. That's exciting to potentially have, you know, Nora and Dean make their case in the final three.
Dean too. Like I said, I don't know. I don't know what to make of him. And I honestly, he even said when he said in a confessional that he's been playing a low key game and that it was intentional. Mm-hmm. There's a small clip of him saying it was intentional, my low key game, but now it's time for me to bring my game and show the jury why I deserve to win the money. So how creative is he going to be able to get in these last, you know, few days out there? And even though there's five people left in the game, there's still as many days left as if there were six people left in the game. So there is additional time there for things to happen and plays to be made. It's just, will he be able to do it? The biggest problem is that once your final five or final six have it in their head that this is the order, that is the order. Like you can't, there's only so much you can do to change that from happening.
Let me bring in this question from Ivan. Do you see parallels between your alliance with Wendell and possibly Laurel and Donathan too, with Lauren, Tommy, and Janet? Both alliances got blindsided once pre-merge, but after a shaky start to the post-merge, they went on to play a very dominant, even though Laurel, Donathan, and Janet appeared to be on the outs prior to the double tribal council twist.
Yeah, I mean, I would say Donathan was most comparable to being our Janet, you know, but in this day and age, you can't even go to four. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. But just to show our loyalty to Donathan, just to keep him intact, it was important that he knew he was going to four. It's different now, though. Now that we've seen the way this final four fire making thing, like you just can't take those chances anymore. But yeah, I definitely see, I see a lot of similarities in this season's cast with the scenario that I experienced myself in my own season. And it's just different. And you learn every new season that comes in, learns a little bit from the prior seasons before them. I think Christian mentioned it. Like you are such a great study of the seasons before you play the game.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like you've studied every season.
Ghost Island, I think, made a huge impact on this season.
I think Ghost Island had a huge impact on a few seasons that were recent and not, you could say, oh, don't bring someone to the end like Wendell and myself did. I think Laurel had one of the biggest impacts.
Yeah.
It's triggered people to not allow themselves to sit on the sideline. And again, I seen Laurel do a lot more than they showed, but from the viewer's perspective, she should have done things that she didn't do. And I think that caused these more recent seasons to say, we're not going to be that person. We're going to pull the trigger. We're going to make things happen. Mm-hmm. So I love that's what it's supposed to be. But as far as being a person who's going on the show, you are well-versed in the most recent seasons before you. And then once your season is over and it airs, the seasons that come after you, it's a different perspective. You have a different lens. You see things differently. And
so
you're
what
not
was front of mind when you played that you had just seen on the show before you left to go play?
I think Millennials Gen X was the most recent for us. And I think, I mean, Game Changers also we got to watch, but you can't, you, as a new player, you're not watching a returnee season. You want to see the most recent newbie season.
Yeah.
So that was.
You guys went to go play right after the end of Game Changers.
Right after Game Changers. Yeah. I remember watching the finale of Game Changers here at my parents' house with my whole family, because we were all kind of like getting ramped up for my departure, you know? So we watched that and, and it was fun, you know? And that's what I'm saying. The whole journey going into it is one thing, and then once you come out of it, now you watch the seasons, like Christian said, the lens is a lot different now, and your perspective is different, and you just see things differently. Millennials Gen X had the hugest impact on our season, for sure, and there was nothing really specific that stood out that we were like, oh, we got to make sure we don't do this, or we do that. I think Millennials Gen X was a really just fun experience show, the Zeke stuff, and Brett coming out, and Adam was a pretty good winner, and you just kind of was hoping you had a good experience like those guys did. You didn't expect a big political, you know, change or social thing like that's been going on in more recent seasons. And I think for us, it was just a good, fun season that we played, even though it might not have been the most exciting season to watch. For us, it was a fun season to play.
Okay. Let me ask you a question about Detective Dean. Here is Sarah, who has some very strong feelings about Dean and his journey in this season and what he's been responsible for along the way, all of the carnage that he's left behind him. Here is Sarah.
Hi, Rob. This is Sarah from Seattle, and I just want to talk about Dean. So Dean has kind of become my annoying little brother, and he's been ruining every single saving grace this season that I've seen. First, I loved Chelsea, and I wanted her to win, and of course, the faux man's got her booted. And there's Kelly, and I blame Dean for her going home because he didn't tell her that she was going home so she could use her idol. Which, of course, he loves telling other people when they're going to go home, but that's another point, which brings us to Queen Krafishma. By telling Tommy that he was going to be on the block, and so she goes home. And now Elaine, I blame Dean for winning immunity, so Elaine goes home. And now with this stupid idol thing, is he going to kill our last surviving player that we're all rooting for, Queen Angel Janet? Ugh. Is Dean actually playing the game? Let me know your thoughts. Bye.
All right. So Sarah really lays out Dean's resume where basically all of these, strong female players along the way, that somehow one way or another, Dean is responsible for them going home. That was this by design, or is he sort of like the Forrest Gump of this Survivor season where just that the light, you know, destiny has just blown him through like the feather to place where he's just knocking over different toppling the games of the different women that are out there.
That was a great voicemail, because that really did lay out all the destruction he did lay out. Yeah.
Yeah. If he could stand there and say that at the final tribal council.
That's what I was just saying. This voicemail would be the ideal thing to lay out at final tribal, because he did have a hand in it. And was it accidental, or did he truly design it that way is the question, which is why I think Dean has a shot here, because there's little hints that he talks about that it is by design. He said in his confessional, I've been laying low this whole time, but that's what I've wanted. And now it's my time to do something. The other thing he said when he was with Rob and Sandra at Island of the Idols, he brought up how he had a hand in allowing, sitting out of the blind side and letting the 6 and the 7 be responsible for it because he wanted them on the outs. If you go back and watch that scene. So it's almost like he's telling Rob and Sandra, I had something to do with Karishma and it was my fault. And I did that on purpose because the two people who are getting the backlash for it's not me, it's two other people in the game. So are there flashes of genius in the Dean game is what I want to know. And, I saw him last week at the holiday party and we couldn't really have a serious conversation. It was mostly over cocktails and just hugging and love and you guys are having fun and blah, blah, blah. So there's really no way for me to tell his intelligence level, but I'm starting to see flashes of it in the game. And I think if he can put the words together that we just heard in that voicemail, along with a couple of key moves through these next few days, there's a shot. It's the same thing like Rick Devins. Like he needs the stars to be completely aligned. Mm-hmm. You know, everything needs to work in his favor for him to get there. And it has to just completely be laid out for him. And unless that happens, I don't see him winning.
Okay. I agree. But do you feel like that this was all, is this Dean's plan? Do you feel like that that's, is that fair to say?
I'm trying to figure that out about him. Because if it was his plan, it could be genius. Mm-hmm. Or if it was accidental and he was just bumping into things and the right people were falling out of place, it could at least be perceived as being genius. But he has to be able to pitch it that way. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? So I don't know. I'm trying to learn Dean as a person. We didn't get enough of him throughout mm-hmm. the season. He was kind of quiet, hand in hair guy, like Tommy said. But now we're starting to see sparks of life. Mm-hmm. And I want to see the substance and the texture that Dean brings to this game.
Yeah. I think that if anybody did a rewatch of the season, I feel like that Dean would be better received on the rewatch. Yeah, it's like, because I think that like we've come to like learn more about him as the season, like it's like, who is this guy? Like, is he what is he doing? And I think then like all of these like little weird things like Detective Dean and like the hand through the hair, and I feel like that they were probably all there from the beginning of the season. And I feel like that, you know, one day I will go back and rewatch the season. And I think that the Dean stuff is going to play, I think, even better.
Yeah, I agree. Once you learn a person's character and then you go back and see that character in, you know, in motion, now you can associate those traits.
Like Nora, we got who Nora was right out of the gate. I think it took us a long time to even understand like what we had on our hands in Dean.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's funny, too, because a friend of mine was asking me some stuff about the Dan situation. I happened to just put the Merge episode on to give a little context. And it's funny because now I see Dean in the Merge episode with his sneakers wrapped around his shoulder and his hand must have went through his hair 6 or 7 times in that episode. And I was like, these are things that. Right. We missed. If we did do a rewatch, we would see all these little these trinkets that he's bringing to it. So it's funny. But yeah, I think that goes with any season. If you can really get the character traits from mm-hmm. a player later in the game, it's more appreciative if you do the rewatch.
OK, Dean, in addition to sneakers, has had the legacy advantage, the fake legacy advantage. And we saw him get it at that 2-hour Merge episode from Jamal. Cliff has a question for you about Dean and his legacy advantage on this season.
Hey, Rob. This is Cliff from Binghamton. So all season, we've been force-fed this story about Dean's fake legacy advantage. Now, Dean has been removed from the game, and there is no Final Six Tribal Council. Why were we force-fed this storyline for as long as we were? It doesn't seem like there was any reason to even have it in the story if there was no opportunity for it to be used. Lastly, can we go ahead and start the process of getting a Christian Hubicki and Elaine pregame alliance started right now for the next All-Star season? Thank you. Bye.
Well, I don't know how we go about getting alliances started for other people. And I think that's on them. but anyway, so Cliff brings up this point about how why are we seeing the legacy advantage, Dominic? Well, why did we see it if he's not able to play it at 6?
Yeah, is it almost like they have to keep it on the show because there's no way to avoid it? Like, people would be confused if we didn't give it some backstory, because there's really no way to avoid him getting up and playing something at some point. That could be one reason. Or maybe we can see Detective Dean try to still do something creative with it at 5. That was something I tweeted this week. It was weird. I watched the episode. I went to bed and I woke up in the middle of the night. And I'm like, wait, Dean can't play his fake advantage at 6 because there's not 6 mm-hmm. anymore. So that to me bummed me out, because I wanted to see a train wreck happen, mm-hmm. you know, or I wanted to see something very creative happen. Either way, I wanted to see this thing play out. And is it possible that we're still getting backstory, or we've had backstory this whole time, because maybe Dean's still going to take a crack at it? Mm-hmm. I'd like to see that. Or maybe Dean can say, look, we skipped a person, but I was told that this thing is still in play at five. Mm-hmm. So I'm pulling the trigger on it.
Yeah.
I like to think that it's still going to be brought up in the finale. I like I said, yeah. Good or bad, I want to see what the hell happens with it.
I went to sleep listening to the RHAP B&B last night. So I feel like that maybe they talked about this, or I'm not sure. So I'm a little hazy about where this is in my brain, but that if Dean brings it up at the final tribal council, is it possible that he brings it up like a resume point, and then Jamal is like, dude, I got something to tell you. Like,
that's fair. But also, yeah, well, if Jamal blows it up, then he's screwed. But think about it. He didn't get to play it at six now, so no one will ever know the truth about it besides Jamal. But wouldn't you think Jamal has talked to people at Ponderosa about this fake advantage at this point?
Mm-hmm.
I would think. So
yeah,
people going into it, when the jury comes there and Dean's sitting there at final three and he just tries to pitch.
Or what if Jamal ask a question about it?
Oh, that'd be cool.
Dean, what can you tell us about how you got the legacy advantage, or why you decided to use the legacy advantage? You're like, well, funny you should ask about that.
That's a situation where you could be as creative as you want, but if the jury already knows the details of what happened there, it's not really going to help them too much. And that's the unfortunate part about Ponderosa, is kind of all the information is kind of revealed to all the jury members there. But it could have been a fun thing. I like to think it's still going to be used, or at least spoken about, at this finale. And I'm just curious to see how it goes.
Okay, so I want to segue from talking about the legacy advantage to talking about our sponsor for this episode of the podcast, Dominic. And those are our friends over at Legacy Box. And what Legacy Box does is they convert your family's old home movies into digital media that you can enjoy without having to go find the cables to hook up the VCR or the old camera or any other terrible way that you'd have to go to take the TV off the wall to try to watch your old home movies. Dom, do your parents have boxes of home movies around here anywhere?
Absolutely, floating around somewhere. This is smart. This is a really smart idea. All right. I actually, you want to know something regarding this? I was on a game show in sixth grade on Nickelodeon.
Yes.
Called Make the Grade.
Yes.
And my father has this VHS sitting around somewhere along with some other real nice treats. And he's been talking about this. What can I do? I don't even own a VCR anymore. What the hell can we do with this stuff? Is your answer.
Not only is it a great gift idea at the start of the new year, everybody likes to clean up, get rid of a lot of the clutter, and Legacy Box can help with that, because what they're going to do is send you out the Legacy Box crate. You fill it with your old digital or your old media, and they're going to convert it into a DVD, a thumb drive, or a digital download. I did it for my mom for last Christmas, and it was a big hit. You can go ahead and then have these old memories of all of these people that aren't around anymore, that they can go back and see, oh, this is when we lived in this house, and everybody, it's a big hit. You'll be the hero of your family. So don't forget about the great offers from Legacy Box. When you use Legacy Box, they're going to send you email updates every single step of the way. Over 700,000 families have trusted Legacy Box. Legacy Box has been in business for over a decade and is the industry leader in professionally digitizing your media. So if you get your Legacy Box today, you can take advantage of a Legacy Box's holiday sale. For a limited time, you can get 60% off. Go to legacybox.com/Rob to get 60% off your first order. Save your time and memories. Go to legacybox.com/Rob to save 60%. Okay. Dom, let's talk about Nora a little bit. And I would love to get your take on just overall a player like Nora, that if you were out there with a Nora, would you keep her as part of your plans, or would you get rid of her sooner than later. This is from Jack, who says, if you were playing with Nora, would you try to bring her to the end, or would you vote her out for being too much of an unpredictable factor?
Yeah, unpredictability is an issue. But also, you know, Nora has flashes of Angela for me for my season. Mm-hmm. And when I say that, obviously they're two completely different personalities, but the one...
Is Angela that much of a wild card?
Yes.
Yes.
She just went whatever way the wind blew. And the one thing about Angela was she was very easy to get information from. And I feel like maybe Nora kind of could be that person as well. Like, if you just kind of warm up and cozy up, you can kind of be like, come on, Nora, what are we doing here?
Angela had basically given to you the information that people were trying to vote you out at six. Yeah.
But she gave me information throughout the whole game. But then she would also give people, my opponents, information about me.
Right.
But I mean, she just was
If I remember that, you know, she was sitting there, and I remember you and her were sitting talking like, Angela, what's going on? Something's up.
Yeah. And I get the same vibe from Nora that if you had the ability to, you know, really hone in on her, that you can kind of get Nora to tell you what you need her to tell you, or at least give you an idea of what's going on. And for some reason, people like to tell that kind of player, you know, they don't tell them everything because they know that there's a good chance that information is going to be leaked. But sometimes you could also use it in your favor. Let's say you want something leaked.
Yeah, right.
Like leaking something to the press. So like I remember, for example, I did with Angela was like I didn't want to actually play an idol at like, let's say, Final Eight or whatever it was. But I wanted the group to think I was. So I wouldn't be the person to say it. I would say, Angela, don't tell anyone. I'm playing my idol this round. Keep quiet about
that's
it.
Great.
Knowing it would get spread. So is Nora that kind of tool you could use?
Yeah.
You know, and also is she a good person to take to the end because maybe she's not going to be much competition. So you have to really utilize these people in a certain way that you think you can get something out of them. And if they're just going to give you trouble because they're unpredictable, then maybe you got to cut them loose.
But I think that the trick is here with, you know, this type of person that you're talking about. Tell me if I'm off base on this, but I feel like that then they also, when they get cut, they feel like that, oh, they were going to win. Like, is that a thing here where then they're also sort of like, yeah, they're really not with a finger on the pulse of the game, but to the point where it's like, hey, I'm running this thing. I'm the mastermind. And now you screwed me over and took my shot to win.
Delusional is the word you're looking for, Rob.
I'm being nice.
Delusional? Maybe. Does Nora believe she's running the game? I think sometimes you hear hints that she thinks that. Even with the thing with Dean and sticking his shoes up in the thing, she's like, this is where, you know, the dead people go and I'm going to make sure of it or whatever. So she
lost
does.
Souls.
Yeah. Lost souls, pun intended. She's such a character. I love her. I'm probably one of her biggest fans, by the way. But I think she definitely at least feels that she's in the decision-making group. You know what I mean? Like the way Tommy and Dean will talk to her or whoever it may be, she feels like she was there. But like that whole Karishma thing, like she was so out of the loop, right? I mean, she just was, you can't come back from something like that and be like, oh yeah, I have a handle on the game and I'm running things. She's just, especially also another reason to think that you're not running things is when you're not being chosen for things like the family loved one visit. You know, I remember Angela in my season was never chosen for anything. I felt really bad for her towards the end. I was like, someone's got to pick this girl for something. But I think that's a clear sign that no one's involving me in things, right? So maybe I don't have a handle on the game. So I'm curious what Nora's mentality is when it comes to that. But I think she does think that she at least has some power in the decision-making process.
I want to ask you about the Island of the Idols, because we've talked about how Ghost Island had such a big impact on this season. And I do feel like that. So if Ghost Island went to Ghost Island and then grew to be something else, I think it would be Island of the Idols.
Yeah. There's a lot of similarities there.
It's gone. Ghost Island has gone to Ghost Island and matured to be Island of the Idols.
The only real difference is instead of like you just breaking an urn, you have Rob and Sandra handing you challenge, right?
Yes, and telling you a story and teaching you things.
And I was thinking about this. It's like let's really compare like Elizabeth's challenge to Dean's challenge, right? Like, what are the odds Elizabeth's going to beat Boston Rob in fire making? It's like 35, 50 to 1, 100 to 1 versus a 50-50 coin flip that Dean gets to do. And who determines the level of difficulty in these things? You know what I mean? So it's just so odd how it's really transitioned. And I remember talking about this, that I was really hoping the Island of Idols would have been more of like a place to really just bounce ideas off them. But yeah. I guess that wouldn't have made great TV. Like, what if someone doesn't really come there with good ideas to talk about? You know, what if you have like a boring player that, but like, we kind of got a little bit of Dean with that, right? So Dean goes, he's like, oh, so here's what's going on. I just was in this situation and I intentionally stayed out. And I also liked the way they were talking to Dean about jury management and how he needs to start thinking about that. That's the stuff I wanted to see with Island of the Idols, not this the nonsense with the coin flips and the stupid challenges that I think it could have been a lot more. It wasn't terrible. It could have been worse, but I was really hoping that if you're going to have two power players like Rob and Sandra out there, let me have the time with them. Let me pick their brain, tell them my situation, and what can they do for me?
Okay, so as a poker player, was that the right call for Dean to take the coin flip here at the final seven, risk your vote on a coin flip to get one of these advantages?
I think it's just, do you have the gamble in you?
Right? Yeah.
So
would you have done it?
Hell yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely. And there's also, in addition to being a gambler, there's that stupid thing that you're sitting there telling yourself, I'm here. What am I going to do? Not play? I don't, at least if you play and lose, you know that you tried and it didn't work out, as opposed to sitting on your couch a year later, watching it and being like, why didn't I try? Like, why didn't I take that shot? You know what I mean? So I think anyone that's in that scenario needs to pull the trigger, whether it's the smart thing. I mean, unless it's a really blatantly obvious thing not to do.
Yeah. Hold on. But just to go back, that didn't Janet have the opportunity to leave any tribal council earlier in the season? Is it possible that she could have potentially then? And I know Rob and Sandra applauded her for not taking that. But boy, wouldn't that be in come in handy at this next tribal council?
Yeah, you know, I never thought about
that. She probably would have wasted it before then. You know, it was the time she played the idol after, you know, the fallout with the whole Dan and Kelly situation where she thought she was going to get voted out next. And so she probably wouldn't have it. And I honestly, I don't remember how long it was going to last for.
Who knows if it would have made it to final five.
If it would have made it to final five. Yeah. But boy,
all these things seem to have a shelf life.
The safety without power advantage would be real handy at this final five for Janet. Forget Island Hellfire. I'll see you guys back at camp.
Yeah, right. I'll be waiting for you.
I'll be waiting
practicing
for you.
Fire making.
I'll be making my fire.
Yeah.
Janet. Oh, boy. But if she could figure out a way to do this, like I feel like it changes the whole feeling about the season.
It would change the feeling about how the game's played moving forward as well. But yeah, obviously it would lift this black cloud, right? That's been over the season.
And, you know, just in terms of like the story of the season of that there was terrible things that happened, but at least the one person that stood up for Kelly went on to win the game. That would be, like a story that you could say, okay, well, at least this had like a positive conclusion, and not to take anything away from the people, whoever's going to go on to win the season. I'm sure it's a very positive conclusion on their end. But then just I think it would help the show so much if Janet was the winner.
Are you waking up yet?
Yeah, I know. I'm just saying, what might have been. I'm a Mets fan. That's how I look.
Right,
I look
a dog, at baby. Sure.
Yeah.
Well, let me just say also, in addition,
we were right there.
Yeah. But also, again, I also feel strongly that if Janet was able to pull it out, it's not just great for the season, but it's great for future seasons. That don't just assume that, you know, a dominant male is going to win fire making and make all the final decisions in the end game, right? We want to see that that's not the case. Otherwise, there's no diversity in the game moving forward. That's when you start to lose people. And what's going to end up happening is I'm going to end up choking someone because they're going to take the final four fire making out of the game. And I'm going to be, one of several victims who loses the game because it was installed for a few seasons just to try it out. Right? I mean, I'm going to end up killing someone. Like, oh, you had to try it now? You couldn't wait till after my season?
So that will make you more mad if they get rid of it.
Oh, of course. Then- I think anyone that is affected by something that Survivor is trying out, and then they pull it because it's not working out. Believe me, we're all having trouble.
You'll be relieved. You'll be angry. You'll be angry that, like, well, why was it even in there in the first place?
Right. This was a bad idea. Who came up with it? Shame on you.
Mm-hmm.
So
because you had won the immunity at
yeah, it was mine. Wendell was going home.
Wendell was going to go out.
Game over.
Yeah. Why? Yeah.
What could have been?
Yeah.
What
might have? Yeah.
Yeah. So you'll see. They're going to see that there's a trend, like you mentioned, that with this final four fire making, there's a trend of men winning, winning, mm-hmm. and then they're going to pull the plug on it, and then that's when you see me standing on the edge of the cliff. Not really, but you know, it's it's not just this. It's not just this thing. I believe there's been seasons in the past that they've tried things that it didn't work out, so then they pulled the plug. But don't tell me that it didn't affect someone winning or didn't. And now that rule's no longer in place, so now that person's like, damn it, like, why did you do it my season? You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, that's the way it goes, though. It's the nature of the game. You got to go with the ebb and flow, and that's the way it is.
Okay. Ben has a question for you about the Island of the Idols, and what is Robin Sandra's ultimate role going to be here as we have a final three getting ready to make their case in front of the jury. Here's Ben.
Hey, Rob and Dom. It's Ben from Tennessee. I want to float a theory by you that I'm not sure I've heard you guys talk about in the show yet. Everybody's saying they're expecting Rob and Sandra to have a vote at the final tribal council and how lame that would be. I have a different theory about how they're going to impact the final tribal council that I think would be a big improvement. After they make the final three, they could have an extra challenge, like the one Michelle won to vote somebody off the jury in Koron. But this challenge will be different. The winner of this challenge would get to have a strategy session with Rob and Sandra to help plan out what they should say at their final tribal council. I can think of several players over the years who would have benefited from something like this, and Rob and Sandra could obviously give amazing perspective on what to say. This challenge could also be the point where Rob and Sandra are officially revealed to everybody. How likely do you guys think this is, and would you like to see it compared to what they may or may not actually do? Would the prize be too powerful or not powerful enough? What do you think?
Okay, Dominic, what do you think of that? What, there could be a final challenge where then the winner gets to have the strategy sesh with Rob and Sandra to work on their day 39 remarks.
That to me would be the most fruitful way to use them.
Oh, okay. You like it.
I'm saying that, like I mentioned earlier, let's utilize these power players who've been through the experience of having to go up and give a speech and defend their moves.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why they should be there. That's how you should utilize them, to be the players that you can work off their experiences and kind of finesse your end game based on some knowledge that they could offer you. So I think that's phenomenal. I don't know that it's going to get to that whole scenario where it's the final, you know, I think we see the five of them come to the beach, right? In next time on.
Looked like that was in the preview. Yeah.
Yeah. So it looks like they're going to have all five of them meet them, and we're going to be exposed to, oh, this is what's been going on here the whole time, even though everyone kind of knows at this point. And it's going to be interesting to see what their final offering is. I'm sure they're going to have some type of impact on the end game in some way or another. I don't think they're voting on the jury. I don't think that's going to happen. But I do think that they're going to have some impact in this end game, in the finale, one way or another, whether someone gets one last time to chat with them. I think that would be the best way to utilize them, is to really just talk to them about how to approach Final Tribal.
Do you think that could backfire, though? Could somebody then say, like, you know, Tommy and Lauren, say they're both in the final three, and then Tommy ends up getting the visit with Rob and Sandra, and could Lauren then in front of the jury, like, blow up his spot? Like, yeah, well, this is what I have to say about my 39 days. And I didn't have Rob and Sandra writing my speech. This is what I feel coming from my heart. And I'm not working with Rob and Sandra to try to convince you to vote for me.
Yeah, she's a good player. That's what she'll say. Right. Absolutely. You got to take anything you can get and put it against the person who's your biggest competition. So if that's what ends up happening, that's the way I would go, for sure.
Spin it.
Yeah, spin it. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. But I tell you, that's what has to happen. If anyone has a chance here, but what do you think? How do you think they're going to utilize Robin Sandra at the end here?
I don't think that they're going to do anything special like that. I almost feel like that what they're going to do is the same way that they sent you guys after you won your Final Four, like, okay, now go to Ghost Island to go practice making the fire. I kind of feel like that's where they're going to send them after the Final Four challenge. Yeah. So it's like, all right, well, we'll give you the afternoon to talk with Rob and Sandra about what you should do. And then they'll get to hang out with Rob and Sandra. But I don't think it's going to be as formal as that they'll help you write your speeches.
Yeah, but also think about Final Four, right? Let's say the Final Four are on that beach with Rob and Sandra. And let's say Lauren's like, Rob, can you help me practice fire? I need help. This is my deal. Can you help me out? Mm-hmm. And then like now you got like Tommy coming over and knocking the fire over with his foot. Like, no, don't help her. Don't help her. Get her out of there. No. This is not, I don't agree with this. You know, there's so many different scenarios that could happen. But it's true because when I was at Ghost after winning Final Four, we went back there and it really is like you spend the afternoon. They're pleading to me like, take me. Don't take me. And Wendell knew. He's like, I'm not even going to ask. I already know you're not taking me. So now it was like I had to determine who's going to go up against Wendell and fire. Mm-hmm. So I'm like, can we practice? You know, let's see how you do. Let's see how you do. And neither of them had any desire to put any effort into it. Mm-hmm. They thought it would be better to pitch me and say, look how bad I suck at this. Mm-hmm. Use the other person. Don't use me. Mm-hmm. So what do you do with that? You know, and that's why you come up with that idea. But as far as putting Rob and Sandra out on Island of Idols that afternoon after Final Four, what are you going to do with them? Mm-hmm. People are going to fight for their experience. Like, wait, I want to talk to him. I want to talk to him. So I don't think it's going to be a free for all.
Yeah. When you had to pick the urn for on Ghost Island, which was the one that you picked? You picked the Kagaya. When you went,
just talk about what a waste of time that was.
Yeah,
he had me hike up a mountain. It took me 3 hours. I was dehydrated. I was ready to faint. I get to the top, and then he put this silly thing for me to do. Meanwhile, I could have used that time to really let that idea of taking Wendell on in fire like really resonate instead of me having to think about.
Well, you
this
know,
other
walking enough. I think is like you know, puts ideas in your head. I think.
Yeah, I guess so. We'll go with that. But go ahead. I'm sorry.
When you, because you got to go and you went to the poker tournament that Bryce and Wendell and Jervis had, and Tony was there.
Yeah.
Did you mention to Tony that you used his urn?
Yeah. No. Tony, let me tell you briefly about that day. The poker tournament I think started at 3 p.m. I think Tony walked in at like 5.
Yeah.
He already been blinded out. He comes in, he buys in, goes all in, loses, buys all in, loses. He must have bought in 8 times in 30 minutes, shook a few hands, took a few photos, and legitimately, I had to leave at the same time as him because I was leaving for Maine the next day. So I had to leave early. He gets in the parking lot, he gets in his truck, and peels out. I mean, burning rubber like you've never seen. He's like, Dom, check this out. And you just see smoke spinning wheels. And I'm like, this guy is out of his mind. He came in a 90 miles an hour and he left 90 miles an hour. That is Tony. That is the real Tony. And when I didn't get a chance to talk about my urn experience because he just there was just not enough time. Tony was in and out like lightning. And he is amazing. Yes,
that's his move.
Yeah, get in and get out. So that was fun. I had a good year for Survivor.
Yeah, well, I wanted to ask you about that.
I had so many things. I can't remember them.
I hinted at it at the top of the show about how you are really like the Survivor social director. And I feel like that I'm so appreciative of that you have come in as somebody who is a, you know, came in late here, Survivor 36.
Yeah,
but really making up for a lot of lost time. Because you were responsible for, you had the Survivor pool party this summer.
Pool party, which was a little nuts. We had
you put together the Survivor holiday party this year with Wendell and Andrea.
The only reason why the holiday party worked is because so many rumors went around about the pool party yeah. that people were afraid to miss yeah. the holiday party.
Okay. And then also you are the commissioner of the Rotten Coconuts Survivor yes. Fantasy Football League, which is going to really culminate for me in a matter of a couple of hours.
Right. Yeah.
People are listening to this. The outcome will probably already be decided. Yeah. But all right. So Survivor pool party, of course, that you when you went to go play on the show, that was a big thing where then a lot of the money that you won on the show went into the family pool.
Not
at the
by
Abate
choice.
House.
Yeah, I had to give my wife and kids something, so they just took the check.
So how was the Survivor well,
let me start
summer
by
pool
saying,
party?
A lot of these people that play the game, whether they win or not, have the ability to go on tour after.
Mm-hmm.
All right. They go here. They see that. I don't get
it's
that.
It's a young person.
It's a
game.
Young person's right. game, right? So as far as I'm concerned, I can't travel to Vegas next week and I can't mm-hmm. do this and do that. So I pick and choose my battles.
Yeah.
And my wife says, you can do this. You can do that. You can do this. So I make sure that the few opportunities I get
mm-hmm.
are worth it. You know, yeah. I like to put something really nice together and I'm not sure why or how, but surprisingly, when I put the invite out for the pool party, it gained some traction
yeah.
and I was really surprised. And it really took life for me when Richard Hatch walked into my backyard.
Yeah.
I was like, what the hell is going on? And again, I'm not going to get into all the details, but briefly, 20 minutes later, he was swimming naked in my pool. And I think that was just. One of the, I mean, I know most people would say, whoa, but it just worked
yeah.
somehow. And then, yeah.
You were one day, you were driving on the LIE. You made a video on an iPad in your truck.
Yes, I did.
Yada, yada, yada. Richard Hatch is naked
in, my
in your backyard.
Isn't that amazing
pool.
How that happens? You just, no, actually, here's how it started. You're a Survivor fan. You're watching the finale. Maybe it was, might have been a Dirty 30.
Mm-hmm.
And at the end of the finale, Jeff Probst comes on and he says, if you think you have what it takes, put together a 2-minute video and yeah. blah, blah, blah. And that was literally the next day driving home from work on a Thursday or whatever it was, you mm-hmm. know, on the LIE in traffic, made my video. And then a year or whatever it was later, I get the call. And yeah. And then being a fan, watching the show, watching you on my couch, Rob Sestanino.
Yeah.
Many, many years ago. And now you're in, we're in my parents' basement.
Yeah.
Recording.
Hanging out.
Rich Hatch swimming naked in my pool. Yeah. The holiday party. I did the Philly thing, the poker event in mm-hmm. Philly. I got to meet all those guys. That's the first time I met Tony, Boston Rob. All that was great. Mm-hmm. And then I jumped on the Running Up Reno bandwagon this year, which mm-hmm. was great.
Yeah.
Hanging out with Tyson, Rob,
yeah.
Ronnie from this season. Amazing.
Did you hit it off great with Rob?
When I got there ahead of time, I think he wasn't there. I think he got there Thursday, whatever day it was. And then Tyson just texted me like, Rob and I are having dinner at the steakhouse.
Yeah.
And I was like, I wasn't sure if I was allowed to go to that. So I really waited for an invite. And yeah, we just sat down and started BSing. But this is what I talk about yeah. when I say Kellen is who she is.
Yeah.
Because we were hanging out for maybe an hour at that point and Kellen just arrived and she texts me. She's like, where am I going? I'm like, come to the steakhouse.
Yeah.
And we were having a nice conversation, getting to know each other. But when Kellen showed up is when the party started. And she just has that ability to really open the conversation up and turn it into like not being so serious. And it got fun. The next thing you know, cocktails are flying. And the highlight of the
nice
weekend,
steakhouse.
It was nice. We ended up having, and I'm really upset we don't have a photo or any type of footage of this. But we ended up taking over a blackjack table later that night. Myself, Kellen, Boston Rob, Tyson, Ronnie, and the five of us just had our own table and our own dealers and
yeah.
pounding tequila. I mean, maybe not those guys, but Kellen and I were pounding tequila.
Not
and
Tyson.
It was fun. Yeah. No, Tyson was a straight shooter. And it was fun and it was great. For me personally, I'm not built to do a casino for 5 days. I'm more of a hit and run kind of guy. I go Atlantic
like Tony.
Exactly. I'm the Tony of casino play. For many reasons,
yeah.
I don't have it in me. I my bankroll was gone by day.
Right,
you know what
right,
I mean?
Right.
So I'm a hit and run kind of guy. So I ended up having to leave early. Like, I had Kellen taking care of me, like, on day three. I'm like, oh, I can't do this. Get me out of here. Because I wasn't sleeping by the third night, and I was just out of my element. And but these guys are cut out for it.
Yeah.
They go away 4 or 5 days, and they stay out, and they play poker 28 tournaments in a row. Like, that's not me. I go in for the big kill. If it works, great. If it doesn't, I go home.
I get antsy to sit at the poker table for the whole day.
It's hard. It's hard. You have to just say that that's what you're doing.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So that was a really fun experience, and getting to meet those guys is great.
Tell me about the holiday party.
The holiday party.
Because it looks so fun.
I
missed it by 1 week. That I initially thought that the wedding that I was going to was the first weekend in December. And so it wasn't until I had checked the invitation that I realized it was the second weekend in December. And then when I saw the holiday party was on that first weekend, I was like, missed it by 1 week.
Yeah. And it's true because you're never really out here. So.
Although the good thing is that a lot of people thought I was there because Jason Linden was there. Yes, that was nice. Right, so I feel like that.
Yeah, we have photos of you. Absolutely.
I only got tagged in a couple of pictures.
it was good. Again, it was another one of those things that I just put out into the you know, the private survivor community.
It was a big hit.
It was a huge hit. And what I always do when I start these things is I go to my go-to people. If I can go to Andrea, Wendell, Fitzgerald, if I could ask those three, look, I want to do this idea. And what we agree on is this: if no one shows, it'll still be fun. So who cares? So as long as I know I have the core four of us or whatever it may be, I'll put it into the universe.
That's the Mount Rushmore of Northeast.
Into the New York community. Yeah. Sure. And even though Wendell's Philly, he's here more than I am.
Yeah.
So if I can put those four people together, it doesn't matter to me so much if anyone else shows at that point. But we put it out there, it grew traction, and it ended up being a big hit. And let me tell you, two people who didn't give me a heads up that they were coming was Suri. So she walked in maybe 20 minutes after I did. When I saw her, my jaw dropped. I was like, oh my God, what a, you know, what a great surprise. And then Jamal walked in.
Yeah.
And I was like, this guy, I've loved the whole season. And I, so when he walked in, he was kind of like, he thought like I was upset that he was there. I was like, what are you doing here? He's like, what, should I leave? I'm like, no, wait, this is the greatest.
Get out of here, Jamal. Did you RSVP? Are you on the list?
Yeah. And my wife, too. Like, she was like, oh, my God. So there was just these little really nice surprises. And again, I love everyone else, too. Dean was a last minute addition, or at least I was told he was, which was great because I'm really into Detective Dean right now. Tommy and Jason, I've always loved. They were at pool party. No one's supposed to know that, but they were at pool party in over the summer. So I got to meet them. And it was great. You had a lot of older season players, you know, Leslie was, it was good to have old school meeting new school. And we just really got, it wasn't long enough.
Yeah. You know? I will say it is super weird when you meet somebody who is going to be on a future season that has not aired yet. And they come up to you like, well, you don't know me. I'm on the next season.
Yeah.
And I'm always like, well, I don't I can't touch that. I feel like that I met from your season. I think I met Jurger and Bradley.
Of course. Like, Bradley makes it known, right?
I'm on the Knicks. Yeah, season of the show.
We should talk about it.
And
meanwhile, like, your job, like, is so based on not sport.
I don't want to know anything about you. Right. I really, I'm sure you're a nice guy.
I reached out to you when you were doing a live know-it-alls in New York, and my season was either coming up or something.
Yeah.
And you're like, you can come, but I can't help you out. You're on your own. Just buy a ticket. I'll see you.
You want to? Yeah. We'll be there.
And I remember being like, you know, like, there was supposed to be some kinship there. We're both from the same neck of the woods, but I realize it now. Like, you really just don't affect me. Don't you know, and that's important because you really need to keep this as authentic as possible.
And I also don't want to be like the person responsible for like, oh, this person was photographed at this thing. And then this got out. Like, I don't want to be part of like ruining the show.
Right. The wheels falling off and it's your fault.
I really don't like, it's complicated.
No, I know, but you've done pretty good.
It's complicated.
And I'm sure like you still get leaked stuff that you didn't want it to have it leaked, but you're very good at keeping it in check.
So you know, I go out of my way. I feel like I'm the biggest person. Like, please do not.
I felt at holiday party last week. I know people were trying to get stuff out of those guys from 39 about the end. And I was like, no, like, Well, leave it alone.
A lot of the survivors that they're like, tell me everything. Like they want to know.
Bradley,
like
information.
I want to know everything. But I really feel like. But even when, like, before I was doing the podcast, I just feel like that it takes the fun out of the show. To like,
agreed.
You know, I don't go to movies like, tell me the ending.
Right.
Right. You know, I'm about to go see this movie. Tell me everything that happens.
Yeah. Agreed. Right. Why would you want to know that? Especially if you're a fan. You know, if you're really a fan of the show, I mean. Why be spoiled? You know what I mean? So just enjoy for what it is. Take it as it comes. Some people feel like they get so wrapped up, like they have to be able to explain the edit, why it went a certain way. Just let it go. Leave it be. The story will be what it will be. And you'll end up finding the truth after it's all said and done, whatever. Just let it go.
I never got that. But Felipe Shimon wants to ask you, can you describe, Dominic, your first person account of mother and son meeting Suri and Bryce? Are you team Bryce or team Wendell also?
Okay. This was unexpected for me. Now, I knew just from hearing Bryce's podcast that he never met Suri.
Yeah, for years. Years. And they had like a missed connections. Missed, and, you know, the
I
one.
I wonder if that's why Sari didn't say she was coming. Maybe she wanted to.
Oh, I don't know.
I don't know.
The one know-it-alls that we got Sari to come to, Bryce couldn't make it. Yeah.
So I just coincidentally happened to be standing there when Wendell always comes to these things late with his entourage.
Right.
I was telling
they're coming from Philly.
Way true. But I was talking to Jamal and he's like, oh, where's Wendell? I'm like, oh, he always shows up late and he comes with, you know, his entourage. And sure enough, like 2 minutes after I said that, Jamal, Wendell walks in with, you know, 5 or 6 people behind him. I'm like, what'd I tell you? He's like, man, that's cool. So Bryce, I happen to be standing there and Bryce and Suri finally make that first connection. You know how Bryce has that very loud, I can't do it, but it's somewhat of a feminine scream that he lets out.
Yes.
So he let out one of those for quite some time. And then he started to faint and he was doing the whole, I wish I could do a good Bryce, but we all know what he is.
He posted video.
Right. That's right. Rodney, I think, filmed it.
So, yeah.
And it was something else. And I forgot that they haven't met until I was reminded when I saw that this connection was finally being made. So for me, I appreciated watching it in the making. And, they spent a lot of time together that night after that. They had a lot of one-on-ones, which was good because they finally got to really, tap into each other a little bit. But it was definitely the whole place just stopped when those two got to see each other for the first time.
Yeah. Really, really nice.
Yeah,
that, because that's his hero for Bryce to finally meet Suri. And he's talked about how that she was the reason why he even wanted to go on the show in the first place. Sure. So really, really nice.
How the hell Bryce hasn't been back on yet is baffling to me.
Yeah, he would be. I mean, it would be a great pick. He doesn't need to go back on. But I don't know. I don't know what it is that they want. But if they can't see what they have. I can't convince them.
Yeah, we'll leave that alone.
Yeah, but you know, I'm as the number one Bryce fan.
Agreed.
You know that there may, you know, it's. Put him back on.
Get him out there.
As far as
Team Wendell or Team Bryce, I gotta stick with my guy though. You know, I mean, we've dedicated that alliance for life. And anytime anyone asks,
because I feel like I watched a video. I don't know whose Instagram I was watching that Bryce was saying that he would have voted for you, not Wendell.
Yeah, he says that. Stop the nonsense. Come on, we know the truth.
Okay. Right. Let me see. I have a couple more questions for you. This is one that is from Corey B. Corey B wants to know, has your wife recovered from you being on the show? How's it impacted family life? Was it all still worth it to be away while your kids were gone during filming? Now, when you went to go play that, Kristen had a tough time with the whole thing, and the family visit, was only a couple of weeks ago. I'm sure it brings back a lot of memories at your house.
Yeah, it does. And, it's funny because, we were actually talking about this recently that, Kristen at the holiday party was talking to, this is terrible. She was either talking to Jason's wife or I think it was Jason's wife. And how they were comparing that feeling that they both felt what they felt, and it wasn't fake. And again, it's not as big a deal as, you know, sending off a loved one to the military, but there's a sense of loss after someone that you spent so many years together with.
Yeah.
Long story short, yeah, she was bringing that back up. And yes, the loved one visit every time will bring that back into play for her. She's fully recovered at this point. As a matter of fact, it's quite the opposite effect now. She wishes I would just leave.
Let's leave again.
Yeah, get out. But for the most part, yeah, it's come up. I think if anything, it's, you know, all your kids have different personalities. You know, I have three. My youngest son, Vincent, he's only six, so he doesn't really still know what's going on. But I have an 11-year-old daughter, a 9-year-old daughter. My 9-year-old daughter is like my number one fan. Yeah, dad, get back out there, blah, blah, blah. My 11-year-old's like, this is so annoying. Like, when is this party going to end, dad? Like, please.
Why is Richard Hatch naked in our backyard?
She was not there for that. But yeah. But even like watching it on Wednesday, she's so over it, you know. Yeah. And if I'm listening to a podcast in the car, she'll be like, shut it down, you know. So it really affects different family members in different ways. And it is what it is. But, you know, I'm pretty sure that in a few years from now, we're not going to life will not be based around Survivor, you know. For you, Will, it's your career, you know. But yeah, the loved one, I think the loved one visit always affects people in different ways. It just really depends what your situation is and how it goes.
Yeah.
You know, I'm curious, like if you left, like what Nicole would, right?
my wife is, you know, a colorful character, and she is that she obsesses about, well, if you left, I don't want anybody to stay with me. I don't care. Do it. Like, I don't want any, I don't want anybody, any relatives coming to the house to help me.
Right.
Like, I don't care. Whatever you want to do.
I mean, I think that that's true too for anyone, right?
She's not like distraught. Like, well, what will I do? I'll miss you.
Well, either was Kristen when I left. Kristen was like, you're good. Go.
Mm-hmm.
And then one day she just woke up and was like, where is my support system? You know what I mean? And when you have kids, it's different. And Nicole is used to you being part of that. Well,
how am I going to go to Orange Theory?
Yeah, that too. Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, that was a big thing for me was how am I, because at the time she was going to CrossFit. She was like, you're going to screw up my whole schedule. I'm like, what do you want me to do? Not go? So you can go to, you know, the gym, you know, and they figure out a way, you know, they figure out a way. But you got to remember also while I was away, Father's Day. Was there.
Yep.
And my wife hosted Father's Day at my house.
Yeah.
So I wasn't there.
Mm-hmm.
And she hosted Father's Day and she had like a breakdown.
Mm-hmm.
No, not a major breakdown, but she got a little emotional that like it's Father's Day. She's having Father's Day at my house and dad's not even here.
Yeah.
So it's just weird. You gotta, it is what it is. So I even though you say that about Nicole, that she'd be like, yeah, go do your thing and I don't need any backup. It might one day wake her up and she might be like, wow, you know, you're a huge part of the daily routine. Well,
the waking up, I think, would actually be the hardest part for her because I am up very early every single morning with my kids. So that would really be the number one issue. Let's see. Brendan Fitzpatrick also said, would appreciate at the end a brief check-in on the Rotten Coconuts fantasy football playoffs. I know it's very niche. So real quick, Final Four here this weekend that we have the huge main event, top of the card matchup of Brett LaBelle versus Chris Hammonds.
That's fun.
I think Chris Hammonds is the favorite there.
Sure, he should be.
So, not really sure how Brett LaBelle has made it to the Final Four.
Yeah, same with Shane. Same with Shane. I mean,
and you had the and you scored the most points and didn't make the playoffs. Yeah.
And it's all because I made one error and didn't play Deshaun Watson. Again, this is very
tight. And I am a underdog here at the Final Four.
You
that
weren't, but you are now.
I have an incredible team, but Shane Powers and his team of one of Lamar Jackson has put me in a big hole. Put me in a big hole going into the Final Four. Do you think I have a shot here?
I think Shane's team sucks, except for Lamar. You're going to wipe him up.
All right. So for the eight people that care about the fantasy football league, that's what's going on. But it's a great league. You do a great job. There's been almost no controversy here, other than when Shane Powers said that there should be more waiver wire money because he had no more left and he needed to make an acquisition.
He didn't prepare. We all have to bow down to his needs. You know, especially a guy like him who's so outspoken about things, right? That's why I was calling him oversensitive, because I knew.
It's a great league. I love it. I love it.
It's worked out.
What's next? What's for 2020? What are you planning for the survivors?
Oh no, I promised my wife I'm going to take a breather for a little bit. I'm going to focus on family and health.
Survivor cruise, is that what you're planning?
Oh, we'll see. You know, I was so convinced too that I don't know why I got this idea when I was in Reno and I was like hanging out with Rob and Tyson and I was like, you know what, there's like this unspoken like winners boys girls club, like I could tell, like I'm an outsider to them. I'm probably also an outsider to them because they don't know me. But like, is there like a winners only like Facebook group that we don't know about? I bet you there is.
Facebook groups are big.
I bet you they do a cruise every year. And
no, they definitely. I mean, we would know about a cruise. Do they do a
dinner?
I feel like most of them aren't even on Facebook.
Whatever it is, I just feel like this is like this underground thing we don't know about, where all the winners go once a year. They get together. They have like this big.
At the very least, I think they have a text chain. If I had to guess, I think they have a text.
Yeah.
And
I'm going to get to the bottom of this.
Get to the bottom.
I got
to
find out.
See what they talk about.
But as far as my organizing things, I have nothing in the future.
If they do have some sort of thing, it's probably, you know, blown up by now.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. They can't even.
There's
too much Instagram love that they have to just spread to the world. We're all guilty.
Yeah. You have any big holiday plans? I know that you spent the morning here with me instead of putting up Christmas lights at your house.
I've been avoiding this for weeks. Yesterday,
get the projector like me.
Couldn't do it yesterday because of the rain, and I was really hoping for a tsunami today. I can't avoid it anymore. She told me if it doesn't get done today, I'm out.
You're out. You're divorced.
She's not even kidding. All right. So she's like, enough. How are kids supposed to grow up in this house and there's no Christmas lights? And I usually do it very nice. I don't know what it is this year. I have a little bit of Grinch in me. I just like not in the mood.
You know, I get called a Grinch constantly.
Do you?
Yeah.
Yeah. Even like these things I have to put together. I just hired my brother-in-law to assemble gifts because I don't even want to do it anymore.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, you're such a Grinch.
I don't know. Maybe I am. Maybe I'm getting old.
Like to throw the G word around. You're Grinch.
Loosely.
Yeah. Hey.
Right. I don't know. We'll see. But I don't have any major plans. We're doing a Disney trip in January.
Oh, that's really nice.
Yeah.
I feel like that's a good time to go.
We go. MLK week.
Yeah.
You know, and it's not too expensive that week. It's kind of considered somewhat value. To go, and the weather's hit or miss. You could have some chilly days or you could have some nice days. But I'm going to try to utilize some of my Survivor connections now. You know, we're going to go see Morgan at SeaWorld.
Nice.
And maybe we'll get a little back lot tour of SeaWorld. Who knows? We'll see. And some of the Hearts of Reality people that run Hearts, Omar. And them, said he's going to see if he can set me up with some stuff. We'll see. But either way,
you walk around Disney, anybody recognize you?
Not anymore.
Yeah, not anymore.
Those days are over.
I mean, I haven't been to Disney
since before Survivor.
Yeah.
So I don't know what that experience would be going forward. But I mean, the level of recognition is really diminished at this point, which is fine. Mm-hmm. It's great.
Yeah.
Also, it probably doesn't help that I put on about 40 pounds since my season.
I saw you trampoline video.
Oh, yeah. The fat guy still has it. I still have moves. I'm one of those fit fat guys. You know what I mean? I can still run 7 miles. No problem. I actually ran yesterday. I ran, I think, 6 miles on a treadmill at the gym yesterday.
Wow.
But my thing is, I like to eat and drink. And I need to really take that a little more serious going into my 40s now. Yeah. You know what I mean? So I'm going to try to New Year's resolution that whole thing.
You still a CrossFit?
Yeah, I'm still a CrossFit. Yeah. And I my approach to CrossFit is not as deranged as some true CrossFitters, you know. Lifting heavy for speed doesn't make sense to me. Yeah. My wife had an injury. Fishback had an injury.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, you learn from people's injuries. Take it easy. Don't do it. So I do things on a lighter scale, but I try to improve my time. Okay, if that makes any sense. So I like to do more reps, less weight, you know, less heavy weight. Mm-hmm. But I was just looking at on Instagram. One of the Andersons, are they both?
I know that
Natalie,
that
she's Natalie, a huge weight.
Yeah, Natalie's in. I don't know about Nadia.
I think Natalie. I think I saw her front squatting like 225 pounds.
They're into it. They're very into it.
I think she's had some surgeries too. She better be careful.
Yeah.
But anyway, enough of the CrossFit talk. Yeah. But yeah, as far as my New Year's resolution is to continue working out and just try to improve on the diet aspect, mm-hmm. and the booze too, mm-hmm. which again, it's just when I go out and have fun. It's not, yeah. you know,
I do a really good job. I feel like from January to August and then I lose it around September. And then
you're a consistency guy. You know how to maintain things. You're regimented.
I'm pretty regimented about 8 months out of the year. And then the fall comes and then it falls apart. And then I do a pretty good job of getting back on the horse in January.
That's good. That's good. Even maintaining any type of regimen for 8 months is solid. Mm-hmm. I do really well. And then
this Survivor season has taken a lot.
Yeah,
out of me.
I could imagine. I mean, how do you do your job effectively with this nonsense that's going on?
This has been
I just
a tough
want to
term.
Say also not to get into that. I just feel I feel bummed for the players that they mm-hmm. kind of got shortchanged. You know what I mean? Going through the experience to play this game has so many levels to it. And it starts with the first phone call. And then waiting to know if you made finals, and then you go to finals, and did you do well in finals? And oh my God, they still like me. They didn't cut me. And then the anticipation of once you know you're going to be on, that's a whole nother phase. And then playing the game is another phase. And then the waiting game, and then watching it mm-hmm. air. These are like the 10 levels of being cast and playing the game.
This is these players went to go play this in March, and this is almost like, you know, the culmination of this is Wednesday.
And to have this stain just taking like your experience.
Their entire 2019 was this.
I heard you talking to Christian about how the cast was almost switched, that Mike White took Dan's spot?
I don't, not that it switched that. I think that Dan was originally supposed to be in season three. That's what he said in his interview with Josh Winkler.
Are you saying that Dan was almost on the same season as Angelina? Could you imagine? Whoa.
Yeah. Yeah.
That would have been fantastic. Not to say that, you know, not all right. None of it's fantastic, but yeah. I mean, I think she'd have been all right, anyway, whatever.
Yeah.
But just let that thought process.
Yeah. So yeah, I don't know I think that the story was that they found that they wanted Mike White, and then I think then he had an injury for season 38.
Gotcha.
And then you know, I mean, he could have been put in his place by Ream,
a lot of people.
Yeah. So
we'll leave that alone.
Yeah.
But yeah.
Dom. It was so great too that you made time for me. That I really appreciate. You know that I had some time here on Long Island, and I said, you know, let's get together in person. Without hesitation, you agreed to have me come by and throw you off of your Christmas holiday decorating.
You did me a favor.
Yeah. But I really appreciate it. Is there anything you wanted to tell people to check out?
No. Just
any open mics that people want to go see your dad
my
play?
My dad is retired, and he is, you know, he's been a musician his whole life, but he's putting it, I think maybe my being on Survivor said, you know what? Let me get out there. Let me spread my wings a little bit. So now
are you serious? You think
not at all. Silly. But I'm happy for him because, the man raised 9 kids successfully mm-hmm. on a construction salary. I think for the most part, we turned out okay. Yeah. You know, every family has its ups and downs, but we're still intact. None of us, you hear about these families where like there's a sibling not talking to another sibling. And that's not the case with us. We're all still supportive of each other. We love each other a lot. And my
has that prepared you for, you know, sort of like putting together these social gatherings for the survivors? So you're already part of, you know, a big, crazy family.
I know how much fun chaos is. Mm-hmm. In other words, if I'm ever at a party, my mentality is the more the merrier.
Yeah.
There's nothing better than fresh blood walking through the door. You know what I mean? And I mean that seriously. I think anyone would agree that, like, even if you have 10 people having a good time,
you're there 2-3 hours. What would be the greatest thing if all of a sudden three new heads walked in?
Yeah.
So that's my mentality on, and that probably has something to do with my upbringing, because Christmas Eve will be here at my parents' house. And you got to remember, I have 8 siblings. Mm-hmm. My father, who you just met, has 13 grandkids, you know?
Yeah.
So it's mayhem here. It's chaos, but it's fun and it's great. And then we leave here just really being fulfilled that we had that, you know, time together. And we all still, for the most part, lived close to each other. My one sister lives in Miami, but besides that, we all still live relatively close. Mm-hmm. And I think you're right. That probably does have some reasoning as to why I like to get big crowds together, because it's fun.
Well, it's great. I have so much FOMO that never before have I had FOMO about not being on the East Coast for Survivor stuff. But you've completely flipped this thing on its head.
I think holiday party might be the one thing we repeat annually. And as far as pool parties, I don't think so.
That was one
and
done.
I don't think the neighbors are going to love that.
One and done.
And the cleanup the next day was grueling. So, but holiday party should be back in effect for next year. We'll see how it goes.
Okay. I'd love to be out there for it. Dominic Abate, the great Dominic Abate. Anything you want to tell people? To no plugs or anything?
No plugs. Just happy holidays to everyone. Be nice to each other. Right. And, you know, this nonsense that went on, you know, it is what it is. Just try to still forget, you know, remember that the show is, it's a show that we love and we watch, and moving forward, we do have a great season ahead of us, you know, even though it's unspoken till Wednesday, but we know that there's good things to come, and hopefully we can get back to, just watching the game for what it is. And that's it. So Merry Christmas, Happy Hanukkah. And, yeah, Rob, thanks for coming out, man. I really appreciate you taking the
Festivus for the rest of us.
Yes, you know all the terminologies, man. I'm sorry. I'm living in a hole. But yeah, so thanks for taking a 30-minute drive. Was it 30 minutes?
Less than that. Well, I mean, yeah.
Sunday morning is not traffic.
You're beautiful. It's beautiful. All right.
That's it. That's all I got, babe.
Dom, thank you so much. We're going to be back. We're going to have this week in Survivor still to come. And then on Wednesday, we will have wire-to-wire coverage with the Survivor finale. I'll be out there in person, get my interviews with the final five. And so I'm looking forward to that. Then I'm going to jump in my car, get back to the Valley, podcast with Stephen Fishback, and then we'll be able to get our interviews out there. And then Mike Bloom, the great Mike Bloom, is going to be staying with me. We're going to be going to the finale. Then he and I will have a full breakdown of the finale and all your feedback questions coming up on Thursday. So we're going to have a lot of coverage about everything from this finale, how everything ends up getting handled, and ultimately the game itself. So that's all coming up. Make sure you subscribe to the podcast. Rob has a website.com/iTunes. And for everything that's going on in our patron community, our patron-only podcast feed, I did about a 2.5-hour patron Facebook call yesterday. If you want to check out that kind of stuff, go to Rob's website.com/patron. Take care, everybody. Have a good one. Bye.